So, any comments or reflections about your discussion or what came out of your mouth, what you discovered? Anything? Again, as I said last week, I wasn't able to listen to your conversation, so I don't know what happened. And speed it up. It's not multitasking.
Well, it's not enlightenment in like 6 nanoseconds.
Thank you. Someone else? Beautiful, thank you. I also think that something very precious about intentionality, the intentions people have, and to know that there are many people with the intention to practice and to wake up and be truthful and compassionate is very meaningful for me also. And I, you know, in a sense, I take refuge in intention. Intention is so important. Fall back on our intention. And also the idea that there are all these groups out there also is meaningful for me. You know, at any given moment, there's probably someone on the planet meditating with you. Someone on the planet on retreat. Someone, you know. And it's just great to think of that. Someone else.
At the same time, whether we know it or not, teaching or learning from somebody else.
I think it's very, very important. And you know, in a sense, we're all students. We all share that together, and what we all have in common is our engagement with the Dharma, with our intentions, and at times our roles shift: time for teachers and time for students. In the Zen Dharma transmission ceremony, when someone gets authorized to be a Zen teacher, they have this kind of built into the ceremony is first you bow to your teacher, and then your teacher bows to you, and you put your bowing cloth over your teacher's cloth, and then the teacher, you know, they kind of role reversal is implied in that ceremony.
Relaxed and open, and they become even more relaxed, and it's this exchange without anybody talking about Buddhism at all.
Yeah. Thank you. So one of the classic understandings of going for refuge is that it involves something like a commitment. The refuge is not just, we don't just commit ourselves to always, you know, be supported. You know, that we could, you know, we know there's something out there that's very supportive and very meaningful, and I just kind of rest on the fact that other people are practicing and they're inspiring, or rest of that. Somewhere in that book there's some great, great teachings, or somewhere in the past there was a Buddha who was really great. But that there's also a commitment to somehow let what Buddha, Dharma, Sangha stand for be an orientation, a direction, a way that we want to live our lives. And I think that's really one of the central aspects of all this, is that we want to live in a new way, or a different way, or we want to acknowledge the fact that we're trying to live now in a way that is aligned with what we refer to as the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, what we understand is that. And so we're trying to live a life that's dedicated to kind of the liberation, the awakening, the compassion of a Buddha. Trying to live a life that's aligned with the teachings and the practices the Buddha taught. Trying to live a life which is aligned in harmony with the lifestyle, the manner, the intentions of the people who practice, the community of Sangha. And one of the aspects of this, kind of trying to, you know, some kind of commitment or dedication or sense of determination, is also to live by the precepts, to engage in the precepts. And these are called training precepts in Buddhism. So they're not meant to be commandments. They're not meant to be something from the outside that we take on exactly from the outside. They're meant somehow to be something from the inside out, something that blooms and blossoms from the inside, that kind of frees us, opens us, rather than commandments. Sometimes have the feeling they're really being confined and closed down, even though they're very much the same in wording. But part of the idea of the precepts is that as we get ennobled, as we become more liberated, more awake, more free, more compassionate, the natural way that we would want to live is one that doesn't kill, or doesn't steal, or doesn't lie, doesn't break these precepts. And so the precepts are not meant to, you know, are supposed to be descriptions in part of what an awake life is like. And so when we try to align ourselves with the precepts, we're trying to align ourselves with what can be called maybe our awakened nature, or that capacity, potential we all have. And it has a number of functions to do that. One function is that as we live by the precepts protect us. They are understood to be a very powerful refuge. In fact, when I teach the precepts to children, I don't call them the five precepts, I call them the five protections. And I tell them, you know, when you're really young, your parents do everything for you. You know, you're a baby. You can't do anything for yourself. Everything you do for yourself, you know, is done for you. Your parents protect you and take care of you and do everything. And then as you get older, slowly, you can do more things for yourself. You can, you know, go to the toilet by yourself, and you can eat by yourself. You can put on your clothes by yourself, and you know, various things along the way. And then finally, you know, you become an adult, and then you're basically, you know, on your own, and your parents, you're not really there in the same way anymore to protect you or take care of you, and you're kind of expected as an adult to be responsible for yourself. But even as an adult, you can still have something which is going to protect you. And we talk about the five protections that we have in Buddhism. And so the protection of, you're protected when you live by not killing, It's a protection for you. Chances are that you'll get into much less trouble in life if you don't live by the sword, if you don't go around, you know, being, you know, hostile to people in an aggressive way. And then you're protected when you don't steal. And you're protected when you don't lie. You're protected when you don't engage in sexual misconduct. You're protected when you don't engage in intoxicants, intoxicating the mind. Many people have found that when they get intoxicated, they're more likely to do things which are foolish, to say the least. Sometimes worse. And they wish they hadn't done some of the things they've done. So their speech, you know, he said that it takes years to develop a good friend, but one moment of wrong speech and you can lose that friendship. But if you cultivate, dedicate yourself to wise speech, honest speech, that you're protected. You protect your relationships, you protect yourself, you protect a lot. So the refuges, the precepts are also a refuge in that they're a protection. They're also a foundation for being able to do spiritual practice. Because when people are breaking the precepts, their mind tends to be agitated. It's relatively hard to meditate, for example, after you've broken one of the precepts. And there was a time in my life where I kind of broke one of the precepts in a way that was not, don't particularly want to share here. And then I went on retreat. And what came with me? You know, some things you can't leave behind. You know? And I was, you know, really troubled by what I had done. And it really got this message of how much, you know, when you're trying to be awake and sensitive and pay attention carefully to the present moment and yourself, and you're not distracted from yourself, that that your behavior really has a big impact on your sense of well-being and your peace. So living by the precepts helps create the foundation of being at ease with yourself that allows you to go further in, for example, meditation practice. In the Buddhist tradition, they put a lot of emphasis on the importance of living a blameless life. Because if you live a blameless life, then you can go anywhere and not worry about people blaming you. They might blame you anyway, but you know they have no cause. And so then, you know your intentions are good, you know you didn't break any precepts. And so you have nothing to feel ashamed about. Now, and sometimes in the modern United States, people feel ashamed for no reason at all. But at least the idea in the old days, when they were weren't so sophisticated, that the idea back then was you had to have good cause to feel the shame. You had to have done something. But we've improved on that, right? And now you don't have to have a reason. You just kind of basically be who you are, right? But so live a blameless life. And so living by the precepts, you live a blameless life. And there's kind of ease that can come with that. The other thing about the precepts is that they're a mindfulness practice. The more seriously you take the precepts, the more you have to pay attention to your behavior, your speech, your actions, what you do. You have to reflect consciously about the life you live, the choices you make, the things you buy, because all those things have impact in ways that spread out from you in ways that could cause harm or could be for the benefit of people. So the idea is to try to live a life that minimizes harm. And so by living by the precepts, you know, requires a certain degree of being conscientious and present and mindful and attentive. And so that's helpful for practice. And then also living by the precepts, because someone who's awakened has purified in such a way that they would naturally live by the precepts. They don't think about it. That's how they would be. When you live by the precepts, you're aligning yourself with a capacity, a potential, an aspect of your own nature, which is really beautiful. And so to somehow let that beauty kind of flower and grow inside of you is part of the function of the precepts. The precepts are meant to bring joy. They're not supposed to be something that brings you down or limits you. They're supposed to bring you freedom. So part of the refuge ceremony is also the idea of the precepts. Taking the precepts somehow having some relationship, some sense of determination or resolve in relationship to the precepts. And each person will have their own. Different people have different understandings of the precepts. Some people take them very literally. Some people take them a little bit more figuratively or whatever. For example, the precept around intoxicants, the grammar of the Pali is ambiguous. Though some people will tell you it's not. And the question is, does the fifth precept say, is a commitment, is a, to say, to avoid alcohol and drugs that intoxicate the mind? Or does it say to avoid alcohol and drugs to the point of getting intoxicated? So is it okay to kind of drink just, you know, teeny bit as long as it doesn't affect your mind? Or does it, is a precept say, you know, just avoid that entirely? And so you'll find people who insist that the precept means one way or the other. But according to the Pali scholars that I read, they say it's actually a little ambiguous. And so you find people have, you know, a little bit, you know, some variation in how people want to interpret that precept. So the five precepts are not to kill, not to intentionally cause harm, not to take what is not given. And that's a very interesting wording, because it's different than saying not to steal, because it means if it hasn't been offered, don't take it. Even though it might seem, well, it's okay to just take this, but if it hasn't been offered, don't take it. So don't take what is not given. And then don't lie. And then no sexual misconduct. Which, what does that mean? And most Buddhist teachers that I know will say it means don't cause harm with your sexuality. Don't cause anybody to get hurt. And beyond that, maybe there's not much needs to be said. And you find in Buddhism a lot of creativity or variations around sexual norms. You know, in Tibet there's, what's it called? Polygamy. When you have a lot of husbands?
Polyamory.
No, I think so. More than one husband. No, there's a special word for when you have...
Polyandry,
when you have more than one husband, and when you have more than one wife, what's that called? Polygamy? Is that what it's called? And so, you know, depending on the norms of society, you have find different things which cause harm, which are acceptable, or whatever. And so there's some variations, but in Buddhism, the idea is I don't think, you know, as long as you don't cause harm, and very open about sexuality. And so not to kill, not to take what's not given, not to lie, no sexual misconduct, and then no no intoxication are the five precepts. So part of the refuge ceremony is reciting those precepts. And one of the things you're going to need to do is to decide what your relationship is to the precepts. And again, as I said last week, it's not my place, I don't want it to be my place, to tell you how to interpret the precepts for yourself, what the meaning is going to be for you. But I want you to engage in it in a very honest, responsible, clear way, thinking and reflecting, what is it, what is the meaning for you? What meaning do the precepts have for you? What value do they have for you? And what's your relationship to them? What's your commitment or resolve around the precepts? What would you like it to be? What's your intention in relationship to the precepts? And when you take the receive the precepts as part of the ceremony, you're receiving it in the field of that intention you have in relationship to them. So you have an intention, your intention, and then a ceremony is supposed to kind of acknowledge or mark that intention of yours that you have. part of a wise relationship to the precepts is to know, is to have wisdom about what to do if you break a precept. And the tendency in Buddhism is not to get lost in guilt when you break a precept, but rather to sometimes confess it or talk about it and somehow learn from that and try seriously to do better in the future. So maybe that's enough for this evening. And what I'd like to ask you to do for this next week is to somehow or other spend some good time reflecting about the five precepts. And there are books that talk about the five precepts. You can somehow or other touch on them. There's a great book called For a Future to be Possible, basically edited by Thich Nhat Hanh, that has a lot of different essays by different teachers about the precepts from different points of view, and Zen and Theravada and everything. And you could maybe read that book, For a Future to be Possible. Or you could, there are other books that talk about it some. And then go for walks or sit and journal or just somehow go for walks and think about it. And then at least once during the week, go find someone who you respect, someone you think, you know, is wise, or someone you respect to some degree, or among the people you know, the person you respect the most, and around ethics and things like that, and go talk to them about these Buddhist precepts and what they mean to you and what their relationship is to these kinds of ideas and values, and just have somehow have a conversation, share yourself, and have an exchange with someone that you respect around precepts. Is that clear enough? Okay. And the last thing is that so the ceremony we'll have is on Friday evening, October 21st. And I need to know beforehand who's going to be there. So I put out two sheets of paper on the table out there. And those of you who are planning to come to be part of the ceremony, the formal ceremony, you can come and not be part of the ceremony, but if you want to come be part of the formal ceremony, then could you write your name on that piece of paper, either today or next time? And when you write your name, could you please do it in block letters so it's really clear? I have to be able to, you know exactly the right spelling. And also, I don't know, some people missed last week and would like to hear what was said. And I don't know, Mark, is that going to be available somehow? Or?
It's currently on the web.
It's already on the web?
Yeah.
Okay, so last week's class was on the web. So if you missed last week and you would like to hear, which would be a good idea if you're planning to do the ceremony, you can just log on to Audio Dharma and listen to it on your computer on internet time.
It's on the left panel, so the references. The left panel here.
Okay. Thank you. So, and next week we'll talk some more about the precepts. Okay? Thank you very much.